Welcome back to the Swim Swim Breakdown. I'm your host, Coleman Hodges, coming to you from Austin, Texas, joined by Yin Yin Lee from Evanston, Illinois. Let's get right into things. We have a lot of swimming topics to discuss, and we've had a lot of pretty good swim meets in the last couple of weeks. You can tell that the Olympic train is rolling. Lots of countries are having either tune-up meets or their Olympic trial qualification meets. So we're going to start with the Brazilian trials. Yin, just highlights from the Brazilian trials. What did you like coming out of these trials and seeing Brazil announce its Olympic roster?
Well, I think Brazil's Olympic roster is sort of a mix of swimmers that have been on international teams for Brazil before, like Gui Costa, Fernando Scheffer, who, despite being the defending Olympic bronze medalist in the 200 free, he's only swimming on the relay. He did not qualify for the 200 free individually, but there's also some younger swimmers, mainly college swimmers, that are like making their first Olympic team, like Gui Caribe, Nick Albiro, who used to represent the U.S., is now on Team Brazil. He's going to be going to the Olympics for the first time. Stephanie Balducini, I think she's been on a few international teams before, but she's still pretty young. So I think this sort of like changing of the guards for the Brazilian team is sort of in place right now.
Yeah, it's certainly a mix of veterans and rookies. Again, Marcelo Cherghini has been a mainstay on for Brazil sprinting, and especially on their 400 free relay, as has Gabriel Santos. They're both on there. But yeah, like you said, I'm really excited to see what Gui Caribe has in the 100 freestyle and the 50 freestyle going into the Olympics. He was 21.8 in the 50 at these trials, and then I believe he was 47.9 in prelims, and then he went a little slower at night, but still got under the Olympic qualifying time and won the event. Keiki Mota is another Tennessee Vol, along with Gui Caribe, as well as another Brazilian native who made his first Olympic team. And he was a great swimmer for the Tennessee Vol, so I'm excited to see what he can do going into this long course season. He seemed to be a short course specialist during his time at Tennessee, and maybe that was just his focus. And it's very cool to see that he has kind of made the transition into a really successful long course butterflyer. So excited to see what he's got. We reported today that Stephanie Balducini was suffering through appendicitis during the Brazilian championships. So hopefully she can have some better swims as she moves through that in Paris. But yeah, I think there was some really solid swims overall in Brazil. And I'm excited to see how we now know the roster and how that roster moves into Paris. Another big meet we had was the Sydney Open. So Australians, you can't complain anymore that we're not talking about the Australian meets. But I think this meet, it was a solid meet. It was very comparable times-wise to a pro swim meet that we would have here in the U.S., I think. A lot of really nice times, nothing that stood out to me a whole lot. I would say the swim of the meet for me was probably not even from an Australian. It was from Lewis Clairbert of New Zealand, who dropped 4.087 in the 400 IM, which would have won a gold medal in Tokyo, I guess. So that's, you know, pretty dang solid time. I don't think that will net the same result in Paris. But what are some other swims that you liked from the Sydney Open, Yin-Yin?
Emily Seaboom's continuing her career comeback. She won the 100 back. Cameron McAvoy getting under on 22 seconds in the 50 free. I think he went 21.9. William Yang still putting up some strong swims. He's probably going to be an important member of that Australian 400 free relay if needed. He went 48.4, which is a decent time for now. And as you said, Coleman, this is sort of like a pro swim meet for Australians. And I do want to talk about Lewis Clairbert's 4.087 swim, because it really seems like that third place spot in the 400 IM this summer is wide open because Leon Marchand's a pretty big favorite to win gold. Carson Foster's a pretty big win favorite for silver. But then after that, there's just a whole bunch of 408s, 409s, and it's really anyone's race from there. Because Ilya Borodin, I think he went 407, but obviously I don't think he'll be competing in Paris. So other than him, like there's just like a really wide open like spot there for that bronze medal position, and looks like Lewis Clerbert's like really establishing himself.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say Carson Foster is like, I guess I would agree with you that he's a favorite for silver, but
just like time wise,
406. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, and I hadn't thought about that fact until you brought it up, and I would have to agree, but we saw him go 406 and win silver behind Leon last summer at World Championships. But then this in February at the 2024 World Championships, we saw him get fourth by a very narrow margin with a 412, while Lewis Clerbert won that race in 409. So he was faster at the Sydney Open than he was even in February at the World Championships. So I agree that it does give him quite a bit of momentum coming into Paris, and I think we'll see where Carson's at a little more come trials. He's about to compete this weekend at a local meet in Austin, and we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, I think that was a great swim for Lewis. I think there were a lot of, again, just like solid swims. A couple that stood out to me: Rikako Iki continues her comeback after, you know, beating leukemia, 57.6 to take the women's 100 fly. Matt Temple was 51.2 in the men's 100 fly. He's just continuing to look really stellar and continuing to put his name out in an ever-growing field of a very competitive men's 100 fly coming into Paris. Dia Seto, 156.99 in the 200 IM. 17-year-old Olivia Wunsch, who is seemingly one of the up-and-coming Australian sprinters on the women's side, was 54.0. in the 100 free, which it seems like super solid result for her.
Speaking of teenagers, Ella Ramsey went 106.8 in the 100 breast, and 106.8 is probably not going to be good enough to make the team just because there are a lot of swimmers in that 106 high range for Australia right now. I think Jenna Strauch, Chelsea Hodges, but she's still pretty young, so it's like that's someone you've got to look out for.
Yeah, very solid swim for her, and as only a teenager, 19 years of age. So yeah, I think Sydney Open again, good meet, solid meet, fun to watch. Yeah, let's just move on to the domestic meets here in the U.S. that we've got coming up this weekend, notably the Atlanta Classic, where a lot of the prominent Florida pros and college swimmers will be competing, as well as the Longhorn Elite Invite, where a lot of the prominent Texas pros and swimmers will be competing. Who are you looking out for this weekend? There's also a meet in Irvine, but I couldn't find the psych sheets, so I don't actually know who's swimming at that. I know for a fact that Bob Bowman swimmers are swimming at none of those meets because they are at an altitude training camp at the OTC right now. And they'll be swimming in a meet in Irvine in a couple weeks from now at the end of May as their kind of last tune-up meet before trials. But who are you most excited to watch compete in these mid-May meets this coming weekend?
I mean, Caleb Dressel's always a pick. It's been really cool to see his progression throughout the season, how he's just getting seemingly faster and faster every meet. Katie Ledecky swimming the 200 IM. That's not really typical of her. I think that will be interesting to watch. And everyone else, it feels like these sorts of meets, like they're not swimmers that typically stand out in season. But it's just nice to get like a meet where there's a ton of familiar faces, just like with the Pro Swim Series meets, one of the final tune-up meets before trials, I'm assuming, for a lot of these swimmers. So if there's like maybe like a fast swim that from someone who wasn't really a contender for an Olympic trials event before this meet, but now they are, like, that's the sort of stuff that you're looking out for.
Yeah, and one of specifically one example of that to me is potentially Bobby Fink in the men's 400 freestyle. We don't really know if he's outside of the 800 and 1500, where he's obviously the favorite to win at the U.S. trials. He's kind of played around in the past with swimming both the 400 IM and the 400 freestyle at trials meets. He's gotten third in the 400 IM at trials meets at least once. I want to say maybe twice even.
I think it was twice, maybe even three times in a row. I know he got third last year. He got third the year before. I can't remember if he was third. No, he was not third in 2021.
Carson was third at 2020.
The last 2 years he's been third. And it's been like really, really close as well.
Yeah. And I think in 22 at World Champ Trials, he almost got second. And Chase Kalis just beat him out. And then in 23, Carson and Chase, I believe, were pretty solidly again, first and Carson second. And but then he just touched out Jay for third place ahead of the fourth place. But I'm curious if his mentality around the 400 IM versus the 400 free has changed, and if he might try to target the 400 free instead of the IM, given the depth of that field. It wouldn't make a ton of sense to me, just because he seems more suited for the 400 IM than the 400 free, given the speed it takes to have a really good 400 free on the international stage. But he is entered in the 400 free in the Atlanta Classic. So, you know, maybe he's toying with it, and we'll see how that goes for him there.
Yeah, he's probably just swimming this event as like a casual, like, got to get more racing in type of thing. Yeah, I don't really see him swimming it at trials, just because I don't think this year is the time to add like a new event to your resume, especially when you're a distance swimmer and you already have a lot on your plate. And honestly, I would even be surprised if he decided to swim the 400 IM at the Olympics if he made the team for it, just because he's already swimming an 800 and a 1500. I don't know why you'd add one of the most taxing events to your lineup when you're already doing a lot of distance. Maybe since it's like one of the first days of the meet, I believe, the 400 IM, he might do it to like get in a warm-up swim or whatnot, but I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know either. I think if he made the 400 IM at trials, I'm guessing he would swim it just because it's at the beginning of the meet.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Just swimming it as like a no pressure, get in the water type situation.
Yeah, but we'll see how that goes. And a lot of exciting swimmers from Florida at the Atlanta Classic, including Bella Sims, who I'm excited to see race long course for, I think, the first time since the NC2A season concluded. So we'll kind of see how her training at Florida has impacted her long course racing, especially in season. I foresee her having a good Olympic trials, but you know, a month out from Olympic trials, she might be in a pretty different place. So we'll see how that is. She had some pretty great racing in season in yards, so I'm curious to see how that goes in meters. And then in terms of the Longhorn Elite invite, some pretty standard names, all of which are located in Texas: Carson and Jake Foster, Luke Hobson, Will Lacone, Shane Casas. I feel like we haven't seen Shane race a whole lot lately. So if he does in fact race, it'll be nice to see where he's at, even though where he's at in season doesn't always indicate where he's going to be at the end of the season. On the women's side, we've got Lydia Jacoby and Anna Ellent, Erica Sullivan, Jillian Cox, Aaron Gimmel, We've got the SMU pros, which include Kasia Wasik, Nick Fink, and Santo Condorelli. Maximus Williamson is a young age grouper who's going to come on down from Dallas. And then we've also got Rex Maurer on the psych sheets, who notably is in the transfer portal. We had heard some rumors that he was training at Texas, and he is entered under Longhorn Aquatics, or the Texas club team, for this meet. So we'll see if he's up for discussing what's going on with him at this time, or how much he's open to talking about that. But if nothing else, hopefully we'll get to see him race and see how things are going for him long course as well.
Unrelated, but I just saw a tweet saying that Olympic trials is in less than a month. That is insane.
It is pretty crazy that Olympic trials is really soon.
And it's gonna hit me like a truck as well, because I move out of school June 7th, so like I get to be home for a week, and then bam, Olympic trials, and I will be going to Indianapolis for that.
Ooh. Yin-Yin will get to experience Olympic trials firsthand. Yeah. I'm guessing your first Olympic trials.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. And for those of you who forgot, it is mirroring the new Olympic schedule. So it is a 9-day meet.
Yeah.
We are spending 9 days at Lucas Oil Football Stadium. So get ready. We're going to have a whole, we're going to have a swim bar. There will be tons of SwimSwam staffers in Indianapolis. So just for all you listeners who were thinking about going or who will be in Indianapolis, come find us. I forget the name of the bar. I've been there.
I did hear about like a Lucas bar Oil that they were installing specifically for Olympic trials, like a swimming themed bar. I didn't know if it was like SwimSwam or something else, but they've got a bunch of stuff out there doing. They're building a makeshift Eiffel Tower. They have concerts. They have Taylor Swift night. It's just a lot of planning and
amenities. Yeah, it'll be a whole deal. They're really making it an event, and I think it'll be really cool to witness and experience. But SwimSwam specifically will have a bar that riders will be hanging out and working at. You can come have a drink with SwimSwam. Again, once I remember the name of the bar, I'll get it out there. But just so everyone who's listening knows, and if you want to come hang out with SwimSwam in Indy, we'll be there. So it is pretty crazy that it's in less than a month, though. All right. So those are the big meets that have happened and are going to happen. One other very big piece of news was one head coaching role was filled at Texas A&M. You have the new director of swimming position held by Blair Anderson, formerly Blair Bachman. She was the associate head coach of Virginia for the last, I think she's been there since Todd DeSorbo has been there, so yeah, about 6 or 7 seasons. She's had a ton of success coaching under Todd DeSorbo. She is primarily the women's mid-distance coach, which includes names like Alex Walsh and Ellen Nelson. She was the primary coach for Paige Madden as well. So a lot of extremely successful women have come from her UVA mid-distance program, and now she's going to get the opportunity to not only be a head coach, but the director of swimming at Texas A&M University. And we don't quite know what that means yet. We have not received word of whether Jay, the head coach of the men's team, Jay Holmes, and his associate head coach, Jason Kalanagh, are going to stay on staff, or if they're going to stay with the men's team. And then Blair will like just essentially be the head coach of the women's team, but also running the swimming program. We don't actually know yet, but Yin-Yin, do you have any initial thoughts on this hire and this new position that A&M created soon after their longtime in-state rival, the University of Texas, created a similar position?
Well, this director of swimming and diving position is interesting because it could go two ways. One is the Texas way, where Bob Bowman's the director of swimming and diving, but he's really only coaching the men's team while Carol Capitani is coaching the women's team. But then you see at Minnesota, they also have a similar position where I think Kelly Kramer is the director of swimming and diving, but they have two separate men's and women's coaches. Actually, no, not two separate. They have a coach and they have a director of swimming, I believe. So it could definitely go either way where there's still a coach for Texas A&M, but then Blair takes on like this oversight position. But then based on the fact that she has a large, that she's coming off of coaching so many great swimmers, has me believing that she'll also have a direct coaching role as well, especially with the female swimmers. Then, since I think a lot of Texas A&M's top swimmers, or at least in the past as well, have been those sort of like mid-distance IM swimmers, like Chloe Stepanek, who's not there anymore, that's what she specialized in. Julia Gorczyk, the 400 IMer, she's also one of their top swimmers. And then in the past, you saw like Sydney Pickram was also a mid-distance type of swimmer. Like those types of swimmers were the swimmers that really excelled at Texas A&M. So I think Blair will be able to continue that with a sort of rising program.
Definitely. So Chloe Stepanek entered the transfer
portal. Yeah, she's not there anymore, but I'm saying like past Texas A&M.
No, but I'm wondering, has she, I don't know if she's committed to anywhere yet. I don't think she has. So, I mean, if it worked out, because she's transferring as a grad transfer, you know, it could work out where Blair could keep her. I mean, I feel like that would be a huge get and probably a huge pillar of setting a culture for Blair, because I'm assuming that Chloe is probably an important piece of the current team. So if she could, you know, instill some faith, if Chloe showed faith in Blair, that might be really helpful for her kind of setting the tone with the rest of the team. So I guess we'll see how that evolves. But yeah, we don't have a ton of information now. I'm scheduled to talk to Blair. She agreed to do an interview in a few weeks once she's kind of established at A&M and things have settled down. I'm sure there's a lot of moving pieces. I think what we don't always remember, or what the layperson doesn't always remember, is that when one of these people and coaches takes a new coaching job that's halfway across the country, they have to sell their old house, move their entire family, which Blair just had a baby in the last year, you know, from their very established home in Charlottesville to College Station now. And so it's a lot of movement, and they have to get to know the team, establish themselves in the town. I mean, it's quite a process. And so hopefully we'll get some more insight on that, but it was a big hire. I'm really excited for Blair just because I think she is very deserving of this position. And it's cool to see that I think the first woman director of swimming at a major Power Five school. So
yeah, definitely not that many Power Five head coaches that are female. So she adds to the list. I correct myself. Minnesota had two head coaches for men's and women's programs, whereas Kelly Kramer was the director. I said that they had one head coach, so I was wrong.
So yeah, I think their system is very unique in that. I think most, because I think Ohio State, also technically Bill Dorencott is the director of swimming, but then there are associate head coaches. I think Minnesota is the only program to have director of swimming and then under them head coach women's, head coach men's. We'll see how A&M's evolves. But that is our news for the week. So let's finish with actually quite a long list of sink or swims. First up today on Sink or Swim, after his 21-7 50 free outing in Lions, do you think Florent Manadou will medal at his home Olympics in Paris?
I'm gonna sink it. I think the 53 is very, very competitive, and I know it's an old guys event, but 21.7 is not convincing enough for me to say that he's gonna medal Paris, especially since I think the times that it's taken to medal have gotten faster and faster. I think you'll have to go at least 21.4 this year to medal, because winning time was 20 last year was a 21.0, and there's been swimmers that have been 21.3. Bukov from Ukraine, Jack Alexei's been 21.5. I think he'll keep on improving. Caleb Dressel, obviously. Ben Proud, and I think those are sort of the Ben Proud's been 21.2, 21.3 quite a few times this Olympic cycle. So if he can compete with the rest of them, which he has in the past, then sure, but I don't think it's happening.
I feel like that's the safer answer. However, I mean, he was 21.7 at a meet. I mean, Cam McAvoy just went 21.9, and we think he's going to medal, right?
Yeah, but Florent Manadou has not been faster than 21.7. He has not broken 21.5 since Tokyo. No, he has not. He went 21.5 in Tokyo.
Yeah, that's the fastest he's been since.
Yeah.
He
won 21.5 last year. I mean, he could, but
I am going to swim it, and partially for the sake of argument, but partially because I just want to see it so badly. He's medaled in the 50 freestyle in the last three Olympics. He's won gold, silver, silver. And I think this Olympic cycle, he probably managed his emotional stock such that it was very, after Tokyo, he took it down. He gave himself a long break, and then he very much, very pointedly built his training cycle, and again, just kind of emotional, what he's focusing on to this point. So my guess is that he's sharpening his knife to be the very, very best he can be in Paris, as is everyone. But I think he knows how to do that better, probably better than most, because he's done this three other times. And
You do have a point. I think the thing that's going in his favor the most is his experience and primarily his Olympic consistency. And I think having that Paris motivation might really tip the scale in his favor. I'm still gonna say no for now because recency. But you could be right. Who knows?
I mean, the trend in swimming, and I think mini athletics, is for the younger athlete to prevail, right? I mean, that's what happens more often than not. Yeah. But I think having a home Olympics for him will hopefully be more of just a motivator, and there won't be a lot of pressure on his shoulders to medal. I mean, I think Leon is much more in that boat, and I'm sure he will have some pressure, but hopefully he won't be feeling it, and it won't drag him down so much as his fourth Olympics. Like, he doesn't really have much to lose, so hopefully it will just give him an extra boost, maybe some extra adrenaline on the day of the final if he makes it that far, and he can get his hand on the wall, because I do think if he's 21.7 in season, I do think that he's got a 21.4 in him, and I agree with you that is what it will take to medal in that event. So I'm swimming it, but we'll see how it goes. Next up, the Canadian trials are happening as we speak. Day one, I'd say, was a little flat, but Summer McIntosh and Maggie McNeil, among others, made the team in some of their primary events. So that's a good sign for Canada. What I'm curious about is, will Canada win more medals in Paris than they did at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo or the 2023 World Championships in Fukuoka. Each at both of those meets, they won six. The Canadian women won six medals, relays and individuals. Do you think they'll win more than six medals in Paris?
Okay. So I'm trying to think of the number of individual medalists for Canada from Tokyo. Penny Oleksiak, Kylie Moss, and Mag McNeil. And I think this Olympic cycle, they will probably have more potential individual medalists. Like, Josh Leendo's got to be one.
No, gotta be a just women. Medalist. Just women. Just women.
Oh, just women? I'm going to sink it. Just because it's mainly because of the relays. I don't think Canada's in a favorable position to medal in all three relays the way that they were in Tokyo, just because I don't really know what's going on with Penny Oleksiak. They don't have Kayla Sanchez anymore. It's sort of a similar situation to last year, and China seems to be doing better in terms of the sprint freestyle department, and also Kylie Moss isn't really a threat in the backstroke events anymore the same way that she used to. She still could medal, and Canada's Ingrid Wilm could also medal in the 100 back, but I don't see any of them meddling in the 200 back. Summer McIntosh will probably make up for, she'll get at least, I think she'll medal in all of her events, so that's like four events. I'm completely losing track of what I'm saying, of the numbers. So if Summer McIntosh wins four medals,
yeah,
and then Maggie, I think Summer McIntosh gets four medals. Maggie McNeil wins one. And I think either Kylie Moss or Ingrid Wilm gets one backstroke medal. And I think Canada wins at least one relay medal. So that brings the total
up. Swimming
okay, you know what? I'm swimming it. I think they'll get four medals. That took way longer than I should have. Sorry for all the unnecessary talking.
I'm gonna swim it. I'm sinking because I think they win six. I think they tie their medal count. Was actually wrong. They won five at the 2023 World Championships, but they won six in Tokyo. I'm leaving room for error there just because Summer might not medal in one of her events, and or the backstrokes are really loaded and I'm less sure about Ingrid and Kylie there. But I do think the medley, their women's medley relay has a great shot. I think their free relays have an outside shot. And so I think six medals is my sweet spot for the Canadian women. I don't think they're going to win more, so I'm sinking it. But there you go. All right, next up. We had previously reported that Ahmed Hafnaoui is out of Paris. Now we're reporting that we are unsure that he's there. So sink or swim, will Ahmed Hafnaoui compete in Paris?
I'm going to sink it. I think there's clearly something going on with him. I don't know what it is. And the fact that, like, he's already, like, unsure. I think he's saying that he's unsure just to, like, not be, like, just to not have anything set in stone. But just based on his performances at Doha and, like, his struggles at Indiana and with, like, trying to get a visa and not being able to train, he hasn't really swam that often this year. So just all signs are pointing to the fact that he's probably not going to be in Paris.
I'm with you there. I'm sinking it. It doesn't look good. If he is there, it doesn't seem like he's going to swim very well. And if that's the case, it's cool to go to an Olympics. And I think qualifying for an Olympics, like, should make you an Olympian for that Olympics, even if you don't end up going. But yeah, clearly something is up. And so it doesn't seem very worth it for him to go at this point. Obviously, I don't know, but I'm going to sink it as well. It seems more likely than not, from what we've heard and what we know, that he won't be in Paris. As sad as that is, because he was just, a triple threat in the men's distance freeze. And I think everyone really wanted to see him be a part of those massive showdowns. In similar news, we reported that Christoph Milak missed 32 of 38 practices after the Hungarian Championships, which is just weird. And I don't know how this information was received or why the Hungarian media really reported it, period. I guess we reported it too, but only because they did. It's just an interesting piece of information to report. This kind of is the latest in the Christoph Milak training, not training saga. We don't really know what's going on with him. Do you think this is true? Sink or swim, did Christoph really miss 32 of 38 practices?
Well, I don't really want to use this podcast to speculate about whether media is spreading misinformation. But I just want to point out that I think it's a little weird that they're counting the specific number of practices that he's missed in a specific number of days. It's like they're logging. It's like they're logging something. And I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot of stuff being said about Milak that's not coming from him specifically. So that in itself is a little fishy to me.
A diplomatic answer, and I respect it, Yin-Yin. I agree with you that it's weird that there has been so much information about him, and I think swimming is a much bigger deal on a national scale than it probably is in the U.S. It's probably a much more prominent sport there, and so it is reported on more, which I get. But I just don't feel like this is true, and I'm not saying that the media outlet was necessarily spreading misinformation. Maybe that's what they were told or heard. But in reality, I can't believe that someone who is preparing for an Olympic Games and had the and put up the times that he did at Hungarian Championships, and someone who's swimming at the upcoming European Championships, would miss 32 of 38 practices, like, not for a physical health related reason. So I just don't think this is accurate, but so I'm thinking it, but who knows? There's been a lot coming out over Milak to the point that it's kind of like you have to take it with a grain of salt, because regardless of what is true or what is not true, he swam really well at Hungarian Championships. So like he looks like he's doing at least okay.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
All right. Next up, Katie Ledecky said that she intends to make a run at the 2028 U.S. Olympic team. Obviously, the 2028 U.S. Olympics are taking place in Los Angeles in the United States. It would be a home Olympics. It would also be Katie Ledecky's fifth Olympic Games if she did qualify, if she did make a run and qualify for those Olympics. Sink or swim, Katie Ledecky makes the 2028 Olympic team.
I'm swimming it. Until I think Katie Ledecky will still be in decent enough shape to put up times in the distance events that will at least medal, let alone be winning times, just because of how far ahead she is compared to the rest of the world. And in the U.S. there really isn't any distance freestyle depth, because you've got Katie Grimes, and who has not been great in the 800 free these last few years, but other than that, like, it's just hard to see two people beating the Katie Ledecky 4 years from now. Like, if there's like a sudden emergence, then maybe, but just based on her form right now, I don't think it's going to deteriorate that much the next 4 years. And also, they're just looking at it now, there doesn't really seem to be any imminent emerging threat. So she will do what it takes to swim at a home Olympics. Like, there will be no slowing down training wise.
I will say, 4 years is a really long time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this was obviously a shortened Olympic cycle, and it's Kayla Deakey has achieved so much. I mean, she just got the Presidential Medal of Honor, first swimmer to ever get that. But she's achieved so much in her career, and at a level that really no other swimmer has in terms of how dominant she is in events, I think. But she'll be 31 in 2028. She's already 27 for this Olympic trials. She'll be 31. It's really hard for me to say definitively, yes, she's going to make that Olympic team, especially in the events that already favor younger swimmers, which are the longer ones.
She's completely turned that narrative upside down.
That is true, but she's a freak. And it's just 4 more years of her like grinding distance practices and putting her body through like the most hellacious swimming that you can do. I'm going to swim it, but I think she would make it on the relay in the 200 free.
Wow.
Like, I think in 4 years,
but the thing
American female distance swimming will elevate.
Yeah, but that's not really happening in the longer distance events. Like, yeah, you're seeing a lot of younger talent in like the 200 free, maybe in the 400 free, but it just drops off after the 800. Like, no one wants to do that. Like, Bella Sims,
it's a good point.
She doesn't want to do that. Claire Weinstein, maybe Claire Weinstein, but like, she's also her better events are like,
yeah,
sort of
200,
like mid-distance.
400. Yeah.
Julian Cox, maybe Kayla Hahn, but it's just right now it's kind of hard to see two women beating her out. And I think Katie Ledecky, she's one of those swimmers that like enjoys staring at a black line every day. She's sort of like Tom Brady in that regard, where like she's so obsessed with her work and that's what she wants to do and that's what she genuinely enjoys. And I think that's what makes her so great. That's what makes her so dominant. And I think someone like her definitely will have the willpower and like the stamina to stick it out for 4 years if it means getting the chance to swim at a home Olympics.
Man, I will swim it as well, because I can't say Katie Ledecky isn't going to make an Olympic team. But 4 years is just such a long time to be like, all right, I'm marrying swimming the mile and the 800 for another 4 years. Like, we've never seen a distance swimmer have success and swim into their 30s. I don't think.
How old? I know men's swimming's different, but how old's Paul Treneri?
It's a good question. Let's see.
What if Sun Yang comes back and starts swimming in his 30s?
Greg's 29. So, I mean, he's not 30. and he won't, let's see, when's his birthday? He won't be in Paris. He'll still be 29. So, I mean,
I did not know that.
He's obviously done it. I feel like maybe some open water swimmers did it as well, but I don't think we...
Open water is different. I feel like open water, you see Diana Nyad.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Open water is different. So, like, you know, if she made an Olympic team at 31 in a distance event, she would, yeah, it'd just be adding more to her already exceedingly historic legacy.
Yeah. Like, regardless of what happens in Paris, she's already the greatest female swimmer of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, that is our news for today. Thank you for tuning into the Swim Swam Breakdown, and we will see you next time.